Baby Friday on the Fan Morning Show. You got a chance to set up your weekend right with a little wake and rake money. So you got to send your bets in at 590-590. We got a couple. We got Thursday night football tonight. The Eagles versus the Texans. The line's like 13 for the undefeated Eagles. So maybe you're riding that. Maybe it's time for regression. I'm not feeling that confident in regression. I think they're going to steamroll them, but send in your picks at 590-590. You got a slate of NBA. Just two NBA games actually tonight, just like the opposite of the NHL last night with just two, but you got a full slate of NHL. No Toronto sports teams in action tonight because there was a beautiful doubleheader between your Raptors and your Leafs. Split screen them last night.
It's almost a Pascal Siakam clear out tonight for the World Series, and I'm here for it. I mean, last night it was tough. It was tough to juggle those three, but with the Leafs and Raptors having good nights, of course, a World Series, we get at least the big game, Game 5. But in between Game 5 of the World Series will be Raptors games. And to talk about last night's effort and to tee up the weekend, we got Michael Grain, Sportsnet, NBA columnist and insider. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty good. I think, you know, Steve Nash might be doing pretty all right as well. I mean, there might be like a little sting, a little embarrassment for being let go. But you know what? The writing's been on the wall, I guess, for a little bit. It seemed like it could have happened easily this summer. And if things didn't really change, it was probably going to happen sooner than later. It happens very early in the season. Steve Nash getting let go by the Brooklyn Nets, who are a bit of a tire fire. A bit of a tire fire would actually be an understatement. What's I guess your reaction to Nash being let go, and ultimately do you think it's probably a good thing in the end?
I would say this. I mean, no, there's no argument. It wasn't a surprise. I did have an opportunity to kind of chat with Steve when I was in Brooklyn, when the Raptors played in the second night of the season. And I had this in story I wrote, when he got fired, but talking to Steve, like, he was very positive. He really seemed convincing in terms of what he thought the work they had done through training camp. He thought that really there was some good vibe around the team, and it really would just come down to how soon Ben Simmons would kind of round into Ben Simmons, which is no guarantee. The Nets had lost really badly on opening night. And, you know, so everyone I talked to, like literally every single person I talked to who either covers the team or works for the team or works around the team, you know, felt like he was already on thin ice. and they kind of needed to win that second game again of the season against Toronto. Like it sort of felt like a must win. And then you talk to some other people who kind of were a little closer to the situation, and it just seemed untenable. I had one person tell me that one of the veterans was telling other guys, on the floor that Nash has to go. And this was in preseason, and another veteran one of the stars telling people that, look, we just suck. And so in that sense, you'd go from Steve feeling like things could really turn around to, kind of people around everyone else kind of thinking, no, this is done. And he would be, even after they kind of had that truce in August when the owner met with Kevin Durant and Sean Marks, the GM, everyone I spoke to in the league was like, the first time things go south, someone's going to have to go overboard and it'll be Steve. And it just turned out to be the case. I think as a competitor, I'm sure Steve would have loved to have a good runway and, get some health with this group and have Ben Simmons play to the level he's capable of playing and show the people he could coach and that he was capable of leading this team. I think once the controversies with Kyrie and everything else just kept piling up and, it doesn't look like Ben Simmons is close to being the player he once was, and the writing was on the wall. I'm sure Steve is smart enough to read it, go, you know what, I'm getting paid. I've got, all the time I need with my family. and the World Cup starts in later this month. So I'm going to enjoy. I won't mourn this too long. You know, but I think bottom line, like, he's a competitor. He wants to succeed. I'm sure he wishes things had been different in the 2 years he was there in terms of injury and craziness. And, you know, I point to that first year he had when they won 55. They were playing at a 55 win pace, even amidst all the injuries and the kind of turnover there. And had James Harden not pulled his hamstring in the first minute of the second round series against the Bucks, you know, history could be different. And I'm sure there's some regrets there.
As Canadians, I think, like, our natural reaction is to be, you know, to blame someone else. I think because we all revere Steve Nash, right? We don't want it to be true that he could be potentially not a good coach, not someone who's capable of this role. But I guess I think you bring up a good point, and I think with the veteran, I don't know who that veteran is, but, like, if KD didn't think he was right, I mean, KD knows basketball. Should we at least, if we're being honest with ourselves, leave the door open to the possibility that, hey, he just was never cut out for this?
Oh, I think that's reasonable. I mean, I wouldn't say, I think, and the point, the way you frame that is appropriate, right? Like, I think my view on it would be, you know, Steve Nash wasn't qualified as a head coach when he got that job. And there was a lot of resentment around the league, or question marks, or eyebrows raised when he got what was at the time the cushiest job in the NBA with zero coaching experience. Now, he's not the first ex-player to kind of walk that path. And there's been a lot of success stories with it. So in that sense, you have literally a basketball genius with 18 years of, you know, in the trenches in the NBA, who has, I would say, literally seen everything. So in that sense, he was super qualified. You know, but was he prepared and ready to handle a situation as it unfolded in Brooklyn? I'm not sure anyone was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you see reports. Keep in mind, it was Kevin Durant, you know, according to reports, who wanted Steve Nash, you know, on that bench. I'm sure if he didn't want him on there in the first place, he wouldn't have been there. And now it's, you know, there's reports as Kevin Durant's relationship with Ime Udoka, which is driving that bus, you know, and in theory, Udoka is a more kind of, you know, a guy who's more capable of confronting and holding stars to account. And that's fine. Maybe we'll see how that all works out. Good luck to him, I say. But I think the real, my interpretation is we don't know if Steve Nash can coach or not. And I am fully of the mind that Steve Nash has every ability to be a great coach if that's what he wants to do. But this situation, as cushy as it appeared when he took the job, you know, it just never really provided him the opportunity to determine definitively whether he could coach or not. And, you know, if we're basing it off of last season, I don't think there's a head coach in the world that could have made that mess look any prettier than as it turned out. So we don't know if Steve Nash is a really good NBA head coach. I still would believe if he wants to go that route, he could be a great one. I don't think we know that he can't, based on how things unfolded in Brooklyn. The situation was just too... too untenable, and maybe someone else will figure it out. But you know, as I say, we'll see.
Is Ime Udoka the guy for that? Like you said, he might be able to hold these stars more accountable. But is that even what they want? I think they feel like they just want to do whatever they do want to do.
I think great players want to be coached, with the exception probably of Kyrie Irving. You know, and that's arguably the biggest problem here, right, is I think Kevin Durant has always, you know, he's never been questioned in terms of his, you know, he brings it. He's still at a high level. I think he wants to win. He probably would accept some coaching. And, you know, and then Kyrie Irving's a kind of a wild card. Like he is the ultimate wild card. And, you know, ignoring the fact he's got some really irresponsible and maybe abhorrent views or uninformed views politically and elsewhere. You know, he's even just strictly on the floor, he's kind of known as a guy who just does his own thing, and he's so good he gets away with it. But, you know, I think the reason that Doka is sort of held out as an answer is I think he showed with Boston a willingness to publicly hold players to account, so you presume he's doing that privately as well. He's not coddling and protecting. And we'll see if that's the missing ingredient. I think the missing ingredient in Brooklyn is Ben Simmons can't play. Yep. And we'll see if he can or not. But right now he can't. Like, he's just not a very good player right now. And he really gums up what they're trying to do, especially offensively. And the roster is pretty deeply flawed. Like, they have no quality size whatsoever. And so they're kind of locked into playing a certain way. So we'll see. we'll see. But, I mean, I think Brooklyn, I'm not of the mind that Udoka should never coach in the NBA again. But I do find it really, really strange. And I would find it really, really strange if I was a Boston Celtics player that, you know, what he did in, or, you know, the reason he was suspended in Boston left him ineligible to coach ever again in Boston, or at least this season. But it's totally fine after a few weeks that he's eligible to coach in Brooklyn and perhaps eliminate Boston. Like, I just find that to be a very strange set of circumstances.
Definitely. I guess the beat goes on in Brooklyn for now. On the opposite end of the respectability spectrum is the Toronto Raptors, an organization that's doing things dead right, at least it seems, continuously here. And we're seeing the fruits of their labor early on this season with a really strong start, 5-3, the pieces coming together. Not that they shouldn't come together, because they pretty much existed as they were, but everything looks really, really good in Raptor land right now, and very, very encouraging. I guess we can start with the one new piece. Otto Porter Jr. did make his debut in a easy victory over the San Antonio Spurs last night. I guess, what are your initial impressions, how he fit in, how he looked in his 11 minutes, 5 points, how he mixes in with a group that's sort of already laying pretty important foundational pieces, at least to start the season?
Yeah, I would say there's no conclusions to be drawn from Otto Porter's 11 minutes.
Fair.
I'm not convinced if he's sweat, but, you know, he spent a lot of time above the break and in the corners. And because he's, you know, a career 39% three-point shooter, the defense has to honor that. And, he took two shots last night, two threes, made one. I think if he can work up to, and the Raptors, I think the plan is for him to work up to that 20-22 minute mark, which is what he was last season in Golden State, and he did it for 63 games. So if they get 63 games of 20-22 minutes of Otto Porter, and, you know, he's kind of seamlessly shifting between, you know, rounding out the starters in certain situations and supporting the second unit in other situations, all because he's, you know, a really good shooter who is a really smart offensive player in terms of where he moves and kind of keeps things flowing. And similarly on defense, his reputation is his basketball IQ is off the charts. I don't think we got a chance to see that last night, but he's kind of like a Andre Iguodala type in terms of his veteran understanding of the game. And, you know, just injecting that into a locker room, onto the second unit, and, you know, a guy who can seamlessly shift into this first unit. I think, you know, very quickly with the addition, with Chris Boucher coming back and playing probably the best basketball of his career right now, and Otto Porter, you know, soon enough, let's say, getting up to his, you know, playing up to his capabilities, the Raptors become a really, really deep team. And, I think they're showing that the last two games. And, you know, even with Fred VanVleet hurt. And I think, you know, you can sort of see the outlines of why there was some kind of quiet optimism around this team. You know, I had them to be a 52-54 win team. And, even in the East as tough it is, I think you can see why they can get there based on what they've done in the first seven games against some really tough competition, and the last two games, in blowout wins against teams that just didn't bring it.
So maybe the sample size isn't there yet for Otto Porter Jr., but it certainly is for OG, who has been an absolute menace on the floor defensively, at least this year. Last night, another 5 block steals, I think 6 in total between the two. He just keeps putting up incredible defensive numbers. I think that we've bounced around the idea that he's becoming one of the best defensive players in the league. I don't know if that's a bit too early to say, but we're just seeing the best version of OG, I think, personally, that we have so far. How has he been able to take these massive strides and lead this team defensively already so far in the start of the season?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I kind of wrote about this a little bit, is being recognized as an all-NBA defender is... It's a process, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like because you can't just look at somebody's stat line and go, "Wow, he's averaging like Pascal." You know, he's averaging, right, you know, 26-8-8 on these percentages on a team that's good. Well, okay, that makes him an NBA player. Like, it's just a question 1, 2, or 3. You know, first team, second team, third team. Like, it's a much more clear cut assessment. Being named one of the top 10 defenders in the league is not. And I think what OG is doing is there's a couple of things at work. One, he's clearly very healthy and fit, and, you know, he's combining, you know, year 6 experience with, you know, peak athletic ability. And so I think that's why you're seeing him just kind of swallow up ball handlers at the point of attack. Like, it's, you know, he's so big and strong that, you know, when there's that initial bump, they're the ones that are off balance. And then that's when he's kind of swooping in with those incredibly long arms and strong hands and making those kind of turnovers and steals. And then, you know, off the ball, he's just, you know, he's playing cat and mouse, right? Like, he knows what the next option is, what the next action is. And he's just, you know, shooting the passing lanes and making steals that way. So, you know, that's why you're seeing these totals, 5 or 6, you know, a game, which is absurd. He's leading the NBA in the category. But the key, I think, guys, to why that's important is when, and I'm in this position, I do vote on NBA and all defense and these kinds of things. And it's a hard assessment to make because, and you know, so if you're a voter in San Antonio, you're going to remember, you know, what he did to the Spurs. And you're going to look, wow, he's leading our, you know, right now he's leading the NBA and steals. I'm sure he's top 2 or 3, or if not number 1, in deflections. So there's your, okay, that's why I'm going to pay attention, is he dominated this team. He's clearly done this to some other teams based on these meager statistics, which is what you kind of have as a voter in these things. And then you start paying attention and you look and you see, you know, you'll dive into some matchup data and kind of, oh, and the Raptors are a 50-plus win team with a, you know, top 6 or 7 or 8 defense. I'm going to give him a vote, and that's how you make an all defense team. So it's, you know, he's kind of been on people's radar for a couple of years, but, you know, these kind of spectacular performances where he is literally dominating the game as a defender, you know, that's where you all of a sudden your all defense recognition comes from. And he certainly, I don't think he could have done anything more in the first 2 weeks of this season to get people's attention.
So the body, the health, the willingness, I think that's an important thing. Like, this is a guy we've talked about, okay, he wants more of the offensive share, but if you just give him the full defensive share and that responsibility, does it maybe help? I think the buy-in is certainly there, but I think one of the biggest factors to let him be him and his full repertoire on display is that the Raptors may be just a better defensive team, more weapons. They looked really formidable, especially off the bench when OG was sort of leading that unit early in the game. And I think Koloko being there for rim protections, helping him maybe be a little bit more aggressive as that primary shutdown guy and really the focal point of the defense. Do you see maybe his surroundings even helping him be a better defender this year?
I think there's something to that. I'm not sure, like, Christian Koloko is the reason. Like, I think, I'm not sure the Raptors schemes have changed all that much. A bigger reason probably is that they brought back 13 players. And so everyone who's seeing the floor in significant minutes is that much more familiar with the expectations and with, you know, the schemes they're trying to execute. And so, you know, Coloco's a nice compliment, you know, and he does kind of, you know, he's shown the ability to kind of erase some of the mistakes here or there. But I think really the biggest factor is that, you know, there probably isn't the role that OG Anunoby wants as an offensive player on this team. It's just, there's just too much, you know, even with the number of possessions that the Raptors are generating, like you're creating more chances than you typically would, which can kind of spread around a little bit, especially when they're getting in transition and things like that. But, you know, I don't think there's a scenario on this team where OG Anunoby is consistently initiating offense and kind of playing that kind of role. I mean, there's just too many other guys who do it better. But I think what's important is that hasn't dimmed his enthusiasm for the other parts of his job. Right. And so he's basically, you know, he's a year, not next summer, but the summer after, he'll have the chance to be a free agent, and he'll be going into a very lucrative environment, right? With you know, the cap probably bumping up to close to $150 million then. And he'll be in his athletic prime. And, you know, and if he can one way or the other prove that he can change basketball games, you know, he's got a chance to be really rich as opposed to just rich. So I think he's aware of that. And he's like, this is my path on this team to becoming an all NBA something. And, you know, and I think that's the attitude he's taken. That's what it looks like he's taken, or that's the effect of it anyway. And, you know, the other stuff will just kind of follow in behind.
Well, he'll have another chance to showcase his defensive ability and probably seeing a Luka Doncic a lot on Friday. That'll be an intriguing matchup with one of the best defensive players and one of the best offensive players.
That's how you lock him up a little bit. You lock him up a little bit and people can't ignore it.
Last one for you, Grange, I don't know if this is worth really bringing up or beating too much, but those three quick fouls against Pascal Siakam, you mentioned like how long it takes to be revered defensively, league wide with OG Anunoby. Like, when does Pascal get the respect where he doesn't get called for ticky-tack stuff? I mean, it seems like that's been a common theme throughout this year, is that even despite maybe not getting the benefit of the whistle, Pascal just continues to dominate. I think he handled that situation really well last night, but I just feel like he should be given the benefit of the doubt by now.
I think Pascal fouls a lot. You know, I think he gets a little, I don't want to say lazy, but he gets a little, you know, I know what you're saying.
I know what you're saying too, but last night seems...
I think he defends, unlike other guys, you know, with his responsibility as a ball, as a creator, he's in a lot of defensive actions. He defends pretty hard. I think as a result, like, you know, I do find he kind of does reach a little bit. I think he does, you know, not specifically the last night, but, you know, he's consistently picking up, you know, five fouls a game. And you know, he's borderline to foul out more than most guys in his situation. Because it happens over and over again, I can't say that that's a refereeing problem. You know, I think in terms, so he's going to have to tidy some of that up and maybe learn, you know, or appreciate that, you know, once in a while you got to let something go, because, you know, I can't be, you know, going to the second half with three fouls already, whatever it might be. You know, for him to get the respect of the officials, I think it's much more important it happens on the defensive end, on the offensive end, that he gets calls. And that's been happening a little bit. He's at the line way more so far this season than he has any other point in his career. And, you know, that's what I'll be looking for is I think on the defensive end, you know, there's a way to stop fouling, and it's generally to stop fouling. I think offensively, you know, that's where you want the benefit of the doubt, that, you know, was that a, you know, one of you, if you're, when you're getting the benefit of those judgment calls, that's really what matters. So that's how I interpret that. I mean, I do think that Siakam, you know, I do think he fouls a little bit more than the average superstar, probably because he defends a little harder than most superstars. And he'll have to find a balance there.
Yeah, that's fair. I think he put himself in that trouble, with the first couple games this season. But last night I was a little, and some of those fouls came on the offensive end, and I just thought, he might deserve a little bit better than that, especially, as you mentioned, in those moments where he's looking to draw fouls rather than get them called on him. Grange, we appreciate the conversation. Appreciate the insight on Steve Nash, and we'll chat again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Michael Grange, Sportsnet NBA columnist and insider.
Level-headed. What a guy. Hey, you don't be on the Raptors Twitter.
No, I'm not. Pascal, I don't let my opinions be formed by Twitter. I try not to. I'm ready to get off it. Just put that $20 in front of me so I can turn it down.
I sent you this yesterday, but so for people that missed, apparently Twitter might be Elon Musk is just loves to be trending. He apparently is interested in putting $20 a month for your Twitter blue check mark as a
I think it's dropped to 8 now.
Okay, yeah, he's taking bargains. But again, another one comes out yesterday that there might be paid DMs. The pay to DM someone.
Yeah, it's bad news for a certain segment of the population. Yeah. Just leave it
I'll
there.
Take it.
You'll take it? You'll sign up for that?
I'm fine with that. All right, so no Raptors to bet on tonight, but whoever it is in the text line that keeps telling us to bet the OG over steals and blocks, that's just got to be our go-to parlay piece at this point.
It could be the parlay piece. It also could be just my auto bet. Like the first thing I do.
You wake up in the
when
morning.
When I get here at whatever it is, 5 whatever, is put that OG bet in.
It's crazy.
They did raise it. It went from 1.5 to 2.5. But again, as we mentioned in the 6 o'clock hour, he cleared that number with 3 steals in the first 3 minutes of the game. Under 3 minutes, he had, he'd hit the over on his combined steals and blocks. So, we'll talk a little bit about what the number is for defensive player. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's actually realistic, but I don't think anyone's playing. And again, it's a very cursory look. I'm not watching any
Mr. Futures.
I'm not watching games other than Raptors games, NBA games other than Raptors games, at least right now. But it's hard to believe when watching him that someone's playing defense at a better level than OG right now. Like he is so disruptive. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's really been one of the key weapons. Pascal offensively, OG defensively. That's been the key to the Raptors season so far.
They're not back in action until Friday night, but we have Thursday night football tonight, Eagles and Texans. You have another World Series matchup. Those Phillies, a big one for the Philly fans up here, Rob Thompson and Corona/Sarnia/Stratford population who's gunning for a big win tonight. We'll set all that up in the Wake and Rake, which is next, presented by Unibet on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
Time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Yesterday, my over in the Cavs-Celtics game hit with that OT squeaker. Your
under Spurs 108, 108 and a half.
But I have a little bit of a controversy because our text line, when they were sending in yesterday's anchor submissions, had the under at 7.
Yes. So the spirit of the Wake and Rake was there. Some people would have had that voided. There were some winning tickets last night for a Wake and Rake listeners.
But when we locked it in, it was at 6.5.
I couldn't get the 7.
But Big Mac, the real Big Mac, and Chris and Moncton, who are anchor selections, in your heart, you really did contribute a winning slip. But Unibet caught on, and they moved the line, and they gypped us.
We have to do it at 6:30 instead.
Yeah. Before Unibet workers are awake, we will do the Wake and Rake. So
we're sniffing around a cash here though. We're starting to heat up.
I gotta say, Justin, you've been really great this week.
Thank you. That's the nicest thing you've said.
That's the biggest smile I've ever seen on your face.
You said something nice about me.
What, am I not a nice person?
No, you are. 6-2 in the last 8. I'm turning things around.
You are.
A little positive regression. Here we go.
We're on our way.
Let's get one today.
Okay, so Thursday night football. World Series game 5. We have our same game parlay. But you've circled Mr. Futures. Justin Future Cuthbert has found something that intrigues him.
I don't know if I'm putting this in, but just to tie up our conversation about OG Anunoby, Unibet right now has him at 250-1 to win Defensive Player of the Year. And again, Grange is completely right. It's a reputation thing. You build it over time. You get recognized over time. However, Raptors fans can be a loud fan base. And I won't say that certain writers and broadcasters pander to Raptors fans, but sometimes we see a little bit of that. Hey, you want to get some positive feedback? Say something nice about the Raptors. Raptors fans will jump all over it.
Yeah, we love it.
So maybe someone will float out.
Because it doesn't happen often.
if OG continues this, maybe someone will float it out. Maybe it'll pick up some steam.
So that's your job right now?
And sometimes you can, if the price drops, which I think it would be, you'll have an opportunity to maybe make some money, even if it doesn't cash. 250-1 for the guy who leads the league in steals right now and always cashes his combined steals and blocks. Like, I think there are worse throwaway bets, certainly at 250-1. Just $5? We're talking about a big chunk of money there.
I
think that's a decent look. And OG is certainly, like, that price is not right, because OG is one of the best defensive players in the NBA right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that with the way he's started. So if you want a Raptors homer pick, a future, a cut bet, 250-1 for OG is pretty good for Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm trying to see who's, like, up there.
Rudy Gobert is the guy.
Bam and Rudy and Giannis and Anthony Davis and Draymond are your top five.
That's
right
the problem, right? Like, I mean, I bet OG's played way better than majority of those guys defensively this year.
Too.
But also, yeah, it's the names. And also, Giannis is a brilliant defensive player. And oh, yeah, he scores 35 a game. Like, I know it's not about what you do offensively, but the complete player, that stuff speaks very loudly. But Rudy seems to win all the time when it's
Scotty,
like,
Barnes.
I got Rudy fatigue.
Has lower odds to win than OG.
That's what I mean. Like, they haven't caught on yet.
10,000.
Like, it's wrong.
Grab it while you can. Unibet's listening. Oh, they've moved. Just kidding. All right. So, want to start with Thursday Night Football. You've got your same game parlay. It's, you know, probably one of two significant viewing experiences tonight for our listeners, Eagles and Texans. Texans at home. A potential blowout. That's what the books think. So what's your lean with the same game parlay?
Yeah, it's an easy game to not bet, but it is also, like, seems like a decent betting opportunity. Like, it's telling you what the game is. Mm-hmm. It's a mismatch. It's maybe the worst team in the league versus maybe the best team in the league. Like, when we revisit the end of the season, there's a really, really strong possibility that the best record belongs to Philly and the worst record belongs to Houston. One team is operating at a very high level, is just saturated with talent. The other one has very little talent and a quarterback who might not be in the league for very much longer. This thing is hovering below 14. Like, you can grab 13s, 13.5, I think, at Unibet right now. I don't know if it's the worst play in the world to play the Eagles, because they love to front run, get ahead, hold that lead. I might be playing Eagles
minus 770
right
on the money line.
Justifiably so. If you're still in a survivor pool, that's probably the pick. Anyway, so I might just avoid it and play the same game parlay instead of trying to chase the 14, because you run into the back doors and that's not fun for anyone. But I will put 13.5 in my same game parlay. It'll be anchored with that. And you brought up a good point with the under with the Texans. Like, if it is a blowout, they're telling you what they think it's going to be, then just take the under 15.5 total points with the Texans. That makes a lot of sense. So you're creating that spread. And then if they're going to get there, it's probably going to have to be Hurts and AJ Brown doing a lot of the grunt work. So over 232.5 passing yards for Hurts, over 69.5 receiving yards for Brown. He was basically unstoppable last week against a lesser team, but maybe a better secondary, like Derek Stingley, third overall pick, I believe. It's a good corner, so a test, I guess, for A.J. Brown, but I still think he will eat. And then under 21.5 points in the second half is the final leg of the parlay. I just think both teams will want to go home by the fourth quarter, and they'll just sort of run out the clock. So Eagles 13.5, under 15.5 total points for the Texans, overs for Hurts and Brown throwing and receiving respectively, and under 21.5 total second half points. That parlay on Unibet, five legs, is plus 1,100.
You picked two of my best bets in your same game parlay.
I'd love to hear that.
My wake and rake submission will come from this game, but A.J. Brown over receiving yards was the first thing I was confident in, but the thing I am the most confident in is under points for the Texans. Like, they will struggle to put up points against the Eagles. They are not strong offensively, to say the least. I think that them having a slow start, the Eagles controlling the game.
And if the Eagles want to prove a point tonight, like if they see a point to be proved,
big defensive
I think
game
it would just be
well.
Like a shutdown defensive game.
So I'm going to add that into our wake and rake parlay, the under 15.5 total points by the Houston Texans tonight. It's minus 108. I've seen it move a little bit today, but that's what I have it at currently.
Okay, let me get mine in quickly then.
Sure.
Before we go to the
anchor submissions.
We got a lot to go through, but we'll set the parameters here. I'm unretiring from baseball betting.
And I said to Justin off the air, I'm giving him permission, even though he said he's never going to bet baseball again because he's on such a heater right now that if he if he loses this, we know that there's actually a curse.
Yes,
there's something in the stratosphere that has eliminated his betting opportunities with the MLB, and we know that moving forward. But if he hits this tonight, then there is no curse, or you've broken it.
It's not like I'd have another opportunity, but the last one until 2023. And maybe, well, summer 2023.
So go big or go home, buddy.
I love the over 3.5 runs at minus 132 in the first five innings. I'm not saying they're going to fall into the same trap with Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander could be dominant.
But they could.
But this is a narrative thing. Like, he's not good in the World Series. He hasn't been good. He's never won a game.
They're chasing a win for him, too.
So if they chase that win, then you're going to get the full five innings of Justin Verlander. Mm-hmm. And if he's going third time through the order by that point, there's a good chance he's going to give up a couple runs. Also, on the flip side of that, Noah Syndergaard's kind of like an unknown here a little bit with Philly. We don't know, he's not what he was in terms of that flame-throwing dominant mm-hmm. pitcher. He's going through a bit of a identity change. I don't know how short his leash will be, but it could be more of a bullpen-ish game because he's not expected to go very long. But I just don't see the Houston Astros being shut out early on again. Like, it took them to the fifth inning, I believe, in game four to break out. They obviously were shut out in the first five innings mm-hmm. of the first game in Philly. So they've had trouble early on in these games. I just feel like that trend has to discontinue at some point. So with Verlander susceptible, as he's always been at the World Series, and as he was in game one, they have at least a read on him because they just faced him 5 days ago. I think he could give up a couple, and I think the Houston Astros get a couple in the first five innings on Syndergaard as well.
And Dusty Baker might get a little
he could let me down. He could let me down again. Just really, really, really in the another narrative thing. Justin Verlander has acknowledged this is likely his final start with the Houston Astros. Maybe his final start ever at a World Series. The pressure on him to win this game is immense, and he has folded routinely mm-hmm. under the pressure and the weight of the World Series in his career. Over 3.5, minus 132.
He's like Kirk Cousins in primetime.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, that's a decent parallel. The one difference is that Verlander's first ballot Hall of Famer and Kirk Cousins ruining my Minnesota Vikings.
Okay, so Justin's locking in over 3.5 total runs in the first five innings of tonight's Game 5 MLB World Series matchup. All right, so we got a lot of submissions here in the text line for the anchor pick. Let's start with two or three from tonight's Thursday Night Football game. Sanders over 79.5 rushing yards. The Texans are allowing the most yards per game on the ground this year. Sanders has over 70 yards and a touchdown in three of his last four games. Should feast on the Texans, and that was the real Big Mac.
Feels like another logical pick from Big Mac, to be honest. If the game script follows the way we believe it will, there will be no reason for Jalen Hurts to be slinging the ball yeah. around in the fourth quarter, and we could see Miles Sanders just rack up. Mm-hmm. If he's not at 79 already, he could just clear that in the fourth quarter alone based on how they might attack the game. So I think that's a decent play.
Ron and Markham said this on over Twitter. Eagles have a big night tonight. A.J. Brown, anytime touchdown, plus 110, and Jalen Hurts over 41.5 rushing yards. And just for $5, A.J. Brown, 2+ touchdowns at plus 650. Listen to you guys every morning while driving my daughter to school. Thanks, Ron.
Shout out to Ron and Markham. plus money on all those?
Yes.
Worth looking at as separate bets. You're spraying the board tonight? I mean, they were
to do a touchdown score a parlay just for fun.
It felt like Hurts and A.J. Brown were just like proving a point by running the same play over and over again last week. Maybe they just try to prove the same point again. A.J. Brown quietly climbing the list for total touchdowns this year. Mm. So maybe they're going to want, maybe that's a bit of an incentive there.
All right, two more from Thursday Night Football. It's been a while, but I'm back. Corey from Port Hope. Hey, buddy, I'm rocking Jalen Hurts anytime touchdown score for the Wake and Rake pick tonight. Lock it in. I was wondering where Corey went.
Is it necessary? Does he need to take hits against the Texans? There's a good possibility it hits, but if you think about it logically, are you going to be running him in the red zone too much? Maybe you are.
One more from Thursday Night Football. Brandon Cooks, anytime touchdown scorer. The Eagles, like the rest of us, thought he was traded at the deadline and won't have any coverage on him. He may even throw the ball to himself on a wildcat play. This is a lock. Free money, baby. Matt in Toronto.
I don't know. Anything Houston... I'm not feeling good about it.
All right, so that's Thursday Night Football. Let's do one from your Game 5 of the World Series pick, and then the rest are hockey. So this is Avery in Mississauga. Astros money line. I don't think Verlander will have two bad games in a row. Philly had some magic, but Syndergaard on the hill is not great.
I don't know. I'm scared of Philly. I don't want to double down on our bet.
Yeah, that's all right. All right, let's move to hockey. And I think we'll probably select one from hockey just to have the board covered here.
Yeah.
Football, baseball, hockey. Cody in St. Catharines. Okay, no more fading Justin. Tonight I like
They're all coming around.
Tonight I like the over 3.5 in the first five of the Astros-Phillies game. I know it's one bad inning. Hold on.
Cody.
Yep. Oh, yeah, so he knew. Also really like the Red Wings at home against the Capitals as home underdogs.
We're on the same page. I love it. We can take his if you want.
No. We're taking yours, but with Cody's supporter.
All right, we're on the same page there.
Hey, it's James in section 114. I met James yesterday at the Leafs game.
Nice. Very
lovely gentleman. He came and showed me some of his bets, and he said he was going to text in today, and he sure did.
There you go.
Hey, James in 114. Great Leafs game yesterday. That caller picked the wrong leaf for a hattie, though. The Tage Thompson mention was great. Didn't do the 3 points, but got the goal and assist, so thanks. You're welcome. For today, I'm going with the Ducks in regulation over the Canucks. Zegras is something else. Depending on the goalie standard, I'll probably parlay it with the Devils money line or the Oilers.
That's not choosing the Houston Texans over the Philadelphia Eagles by any stretch, but it's also relying on the worst team in the NHL. I don't think we could do that.
Well, appreciate the support.
It may hit.
All right, Jag and Scarborough, our guy. Wake and Rake pick, Pascal's over hit once again on points, rebounds, and assists. He's on fire. For today, I'm going with another stud, McDavid over points, 1.5. Easy money or spice it up with McDavid anytime goal for the NHL leader in goals.
I kind of love it.
That's a top pick right now.
So we were talking about the NHL board a little bit, and it's Oilers and Devils who are two of the higher scoring teams in the league right now. McDavid's doing whatever McDavid wants to do. By the way, we need I need Leon Draisaitl to prognosticate for me. Like, he's just like, oh yeah, McDavid should score 60 this year. Well, it looks like McDavid's going to score 60 this year.
How about Kane with a hat trick too? These guys are on fire.
They literally were choosing who they wanted to have a hat trick. Leon's like, McDavid gets enough. I'll give it to Evander. They're in a pretty good spot right now offensively. I kind of like that one a lot.
Okay, two more here before we choose. Parlay Poppy back from vacation with a pick hotter than the Croatian sun. Oilers on the puck line.
It's a good vacay.
Devils are playing better than they are. Oilers are heating up. Parlay Poppy at Pearson Airport.
I think win or lose, McDavid could get 2 points. Okay. So that's the difference there.
Last one here. Zach from Jordan Station. Washington, Tampa, and Boston all on the puck line parlay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Want to go with Jag?
Yeah, I think it's Jag.
Okay, so McDavid to get at least 2 points is minus 150 on Unibet. Mm. Well, we're doing it, though. We called it.
Yeah, let's do
it. All right, so under 15.5 total points from the Houston Texans, over 3.5 total runs in the first five innings of the Astros-Phillies game, and then our anchor, Jag and Scarborough, McDavid to score at least 2 points. Minus 150 tonight. Altogether, your Wake and Rake parlay is plus 467 on Unibet.
Still juicy.
And let me give you my just $5 of the day, because I kind of gave one away yesterday and I'm feeling good about it. Just $5, the Dallas Stars to win in a shutout tonight. Plus 900.
With Scotty Wedgwood?
Isn't it Jake Ottinger playing tonight?
I think he's hurt. Did it, or was there a positive diagnosis on Ottinger? I think Ottinger's still out.
Well, then scratch
that. Dial it back. Dial it back.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be reevaluated. I thought I saw something positive. So you know what? Don't bet that unless you feel like, hey, Scott Wedgwood is spicy spice.
Listen, I was so excited. Jake Ottinger's a talent, but
return from injury.
You should
that quick.
Do it because that's a revenge game. Scotty Wedgwood,
okay.
Former Arizona Coyote. Maybe he goes into Mullet Arena and gets
Damn
that
it.
Shutout anyway. That's why it's 900. But that's I don't think that's a terrible play.
You know
I don't think it's a terrible play.
Live a little, folks. Regardless of who's in net, just ride the Dallas Stars who are red hot.
I think it's worth just $5.
Just $5.
Revenge angle. Love it.
I love it. All right. That was your Fan Morning Show and your Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. Thursday Night Football, World Series, Game 5. No Toronto sports in action, but enjoy your two viewing experiences tonight. And we will be back tomorrow morning. Happy Baby Friday. We'll chat with you then.